Good evening, friends. Welcome back to the Front Porch. My name is Dennis Rogers, and I'm joined by Michael Daniels. How's it going, Mike? How was your Monday?
Pretty good, Dennis. I've been reading Disney's, we were talking about this a bit on the air, but I've been reading about some of Disney's new Imagineering tech things. They have, you know, a whole, if people don't know, Imagineering is basically the research and development arm or wing of Disney. Think DARPA. That makes new technology, and they've been incredible. And when I was going for my master's in VR and rapid prototyping, Disney's stuff was what everyone always wanted to see. Every conference, every special thing, they always had something that was absolutely incredible type stuff. Well, I've been looking through one, and they've got this, it's obviously AI and robots are kind of things they're putting together, and it's creepy and cool. Sure. And weird. And you know, we've seen all the things about like dolls or Alex and things like that, people who talk and they've got some robot faces and things, but Disney actually is putting them to use, you know, instead of just like tech demos. They're what they're doing currently is in what I found interesting is and relevant to this show is that in Galaxy's Edge in the Star Wars world, they're having like little robots that are, I don't know, about 2 feet tall, and they're like cute. They look like cute little kid robots almost, and they walk around.
Like,
and right now Disney's doing a thing where it's called Droids in Training, so that they can test it out in the park. They have like someone who walks and supervises the things, and they walk around with them, like four or five of them, and the little droids walk independently on their own and follow the little worker around. And they do this whole like thing, like they're little droids in training. They take them all the little things and try to interact with people. And the worker, employee person or cast member can just say things like, you know, we're just training these things and we're just teaching them our little droids. So it's kind of like a show and an actual test type thing, you know. I was like, that's so cool. It's a fictional droid in training, but it's actually a real droid in training.
Right.
Which is sci-fi meets actual reality. Is it sci-fi if those are actual robots that are walking around thinking and doing and reacting and doing stuff?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of real tech was inspired by sci-fi.
Right. Of course, so, of course.
Yeah.
And this is one that's like just going to be a real thing. Not in it, but what's funny is it's going to be in a sci-fi world, but it's not sci-fi. Right. I mean, if you kind of think about it, like if you go to a sci-fi theme park or something and they've got communicators, Star Trek communicators, those are basically just cell phones now. Right.
Right.
So yeah, that's funny. Anyway, how's your week been? You went on a little special trip recently, didn't you? A little special trip. Special.
Yep, I went and I visited our friend Fox and his family, Jill and their son, and watched the Oscars. Got to experience. I think you've seen their basement since they finished it with the theater.
Oh yeah. Did you get to see the Ghostbuster room?
Yep. That's where I stayed, in the Ghostbusters room.
It's pretty cool, right?
Yeah, it's very, I don't know how to describe this. A very clear theme, like literally every down to the red paint walls and the pillows and even the lamps on the side of the bed, just everything.
Just everything. Just such a nice, just a well-done thing. And there was like I think it's a neon light. I'm trying to remember the little things on the doors. And I remember asking them like, where did you find this? And just sometimes the patience between Fox and Jill to look at things and find things on Etsy or whatever they might go and have them made. And I'm like, that's really, really cool. It's a custom.
Yeah. Cause they have a lot of their theater room is very much set up like a home theater,
yeah,
with lights on the steps and some custom signs in the bathroom and on the wall. It's very cool.
Very, very cool. So did you get to watch, you watched, wait, you watched the Oscars in that theater, right? I guess.
We watched the Oscars in that room. We also, Fox and Jill and I watched Subspace Rhapsody, the musical
awesome.
Strange New Worlds episode, which was fantastic. After that, we watched, we can talk about a movie. I forgot that we watched this movie that you had seen called Argyle.
You watched Argyle, did you?
Yeah, I'm gonna put a mark here because Fox started this movie like while he was working out or something, and he was like, "This is really funny. I think maybe people didn't get it. They didn't like the, you know, this is intentional kind of thing," and just very like excited about it. And so after we went out to dinner, and then we watched the Star Trek episode, then we started this movie, and he was like, "This is great. This is so funny. I love this so much." And then we paused it at about the 1 hour mark to, you know, take restroom breaks and make new drinks and all this stuff. And when he paused it, I think all three of us, or at least like one of us noticed and said something, and the other two, you know, commented on it as well. We're like, this movie is 140 minutes long. It's 2 hours and 20 minutes. And we're like, how is there an hour and 20 left in this movie? Like, I think at the, I'm going to hit the bell here, though. I don't recommend this movie, but I'm going to talk about, and we are going to talk about the plot of the movie Argyle with Bryce Dallas Howard and Henry Cavill and Sam Rockwell. And so if you're planning on seeing that movie and don't want to be spoiled on it, then skip ahead. So when we paused it at the 1 hour mark, I think we were just past the reveal that Breaking Bad guy, whose name I'm spacing on.
I can't remember his name. The main villain.
Yeah, it's right. Well, the main character who becomes the villain. I've never watched Breaking Bad, but becomes Heisenberg or whatever.
Yeah.
Cranston.
Bryan Cranston?
Bryan Cranston, that's it. I knew it would come to me. Just my brain's on a tape delay. It was buffering. I think we were just at the point where he's revealed as Ellie, the Bryce Dallas Howard main character's dad. And we already know at this point that he's a villain. He's the leader of
See, it's kind of like Spectre, basically.
The division. Well, and that's the thing. For the first hour of the movie, it's very funny. Like, it's playing up to all of these tropes of,
right,
of you know, James Bond and maybe stuff like The Kingsman and all the just cheesy, ridiculous writer spy movie and spy novel tropes,
right? And that's not bad. That's not like,
no, it's
right, it was, it's okay,
it's funny. It's like, oh, the things that are happening in real life are just as ridiculous as the things she writes about, which makes sense if, you know, her writing is accidentally like predictive of real spy stuff. And it's just like satire, right? Like, it's I almost want to call it good bad, but it's not like, it's self-aware, like it's bad on purpose. So campy or satire, farce, whatever you want to call that. And
see, I think real quick on that, that first part felt like it wasn't that, but there were like her make-believe world was, and there were a few things that would leak over, but every time it leaked over, it felt a little weird. And I was like, so at that first part, I was like, I'm not sure what this movie is trying to be. Am I supposed to think it's really goofy and, like you said, good, bad, or am I supposed to take it seriously? So where you're at right now in this explanation, I felt I wasn't sure what I was supposed to be feeling. If I was supposed to be like, oh, it's so super goofy, or it's got some goofy,
yeah,
but it's real, you know?
And that was, I was a little bit in the same place, but I was kind of on board with the interpretation that this is goofy satire, like the Get Smart movie with Anne Hathaway and Steve Carell.
Right.
And Fox was so excited about it, but I knew that it doesn't, well, I didn't know for sure because I hadn't seen it, but I was almost certain that it doesn't keep up, it doesn't hold that level throughout the runtime. And I think some of that was from talking to you about the film, and then I also watched the pitch meetings for it, which spoils a lot of the plot.
Yeah.
And so I couldn't remember what stuff you told me, what stuff I saw in that video. I knew there was that ice skating scene coming up at some point.
Yeah, you knew. Yeah, I went on about that one, I remember.
Okay, then at least part of it was
from
you.
And I'm probably, sure pitch meeting did as well.
I'm sure it was both. And so after that reveal, then it becomes serious for a while. Like the tone shifts into being like, oh, this is a real thing, and she actually was a real spy.
Oh, when she gets her memory,
all of this stuff. And then you get to a point where, you know, when she was a real spy, she was actually working for the division, right? And so was she undercover, you know, in one and then double-crossed the other? By the time you get to the end of the movie, it's like a triple-cross where she's a good spy pretending to be a... Yeah, exactly. Pretending to be a division spy, pretending to be a good spy again, back, and then it, you know, it does the ice skating thing, which I knew was coming. Like
you're like, I'm preparing myself.
But what I didn't know, and I don't know why this was what made the difference. It could have not had this and still been just as bad. But the ice skating thing happens over a big crude oil spill.
Yep.
Like they're in a factory the bad guys shoot a bunch of pipes and stuff and the room fills with crude oil. And then she stomps on a couple of daggers and ice skates on them. And I'm like, okay, just skating on a pair of daggers is stupid enough.
Just so stupid.
But crude oil and ice are not the same thing. They're not slippery in the same way. I'm almost like 98% certain you cannot ice skate on crude oil on concrete.
I mean, I think that's a safe bet. I think that's a safe bet.
I think
you're on something there, Dennis.
And then it's just a lot of ridiculous, like, triple axles and kicking the guys, and it just becomes truly absurd, like beyond absurd funny. That was happening up to that point. And whatever happens after that, it was late and the movie was bad. I don't know if either
like,
of them
like how you're like, after that, I didn't even matter.
right. It was like, okay, this is the peak. And we talked about the three of us talked about it a couple times the next day. Because Fox definitely fell asleep and he was like, this doesn't happen. I don't fall asleep during movies. Like if I get to a point where that I'll turn it off.
Right.
And he fell asleep for most of like the last 40 minutes. And we agreed that somewhere in that movie was like a decent 90 minute movie. Like, I think if you got to the reveal that Ellie actually was a spy, you could resolve that in like 20 minutes, maybe 30,
sure.
20 to 30 minutes and be good and have a decent, like not great, but kind of goofy, like, you know, kind of aimed for either writers or big fans of, you know, kind of goofy spy story stuff and been fine. But to have, there's no reason for it to be over 2 hours with that concept. Like, there's a reason that comedies are usually short.
Yeah.
Like, are usually 90 minutes, maybe 100, you know, hour and a half, hour and 40. And, yeah.
It just didn't, yeah, there's just so much to go on with that movie that wasn't great. I you can always go back and listen to my review, so I won't go too much into what I think, but... Mm-hmm. The fact that it felt like it was all over the place. Like, again, I reiterate what I said at the beginning. I didn't know what kind of movie this was at the beginning. It was pretty, it felt fine. Like it was a spy movie, right? Like a with an everyman person with her, right? Coming in, and she's along for the ride on this adventure. I call it an adventure movie at that point, but then then it just goes to the Get Smart type stuff where, oh, it's not an adventure movie, it's just a comedy. And then it was absurd comedy, and then there was no plot made sense, and it, which kind of like when they get super absurd like that, it tears down their characters earlier. Like if their character was, you know, serious and seriously not knowing what's going on and what and disbelieving things, and then you're like, oh, but what they do and say is absurd too, so it doesn't make any sense whatsoever from a narrative standpoint. So, and then the ice skating was where it jumped the shark pretty hard, but I think it was before that, even before that, when
that was just the last straw.
I mean, it does there's just several scenes, but one of them where I think I checked out was or the point where I checked out was when they're trying to escape and like she shoots him but doesn't kill him, and like, okay, I hate that kind of a thing anyway.
Oh, is there a
and then there's the
was it that movie where there's like a tiny gap in the heart where she can shoot and it goes through the like vascular corridor or something like that? I couldn't remember if that was this or a different movie.
No, that's this one.
Yeah.
And then they have the whole, I call it the Harley Quinn pink and purple gas scene fight thing. You know what I'm talking about, with the fog or whatever that is? And I'm like, that's when I just lost. I was like, okay,
yeah,
I'm done here. But you know, it's and in the last act, I'm just going to sit here for the last act, or I would, leave because it was just so bad. So anyway, yeah, it's real bad, disappointing because it had some potential there.
I mean, I think both Sam Rockwell and Henry Cavill are both, you know, playing their characters very well. And you know, for the absurdity that with which those characters are written,
right?
Bryan Cranston and the mom from Home Alone.
Catherine O'Hara.
Catherine O'Hara, that's it. And Bryce Dallas, like, it had a solid cast. It was just, it needed. It needed some real script editing.
Script editing and directing, I think. Because when you get those over-the-top things, the director is just giving you two different kinds of movies. And so is the writer. Well, I don't know. Yeah, the writer, there just wasn't a lot of writing. It did feel very sophomoric throughout.
Right.
And I guess the whole movie felt sophomoric.
It could have been fine, like, keeping that tone at its level, not taking it full, you know, as far as they did, and trimming like almost half of it.
That's unfortunate that went that way. And they try to set it up for a sequel, but I mean if it gets one, then I don't know what the world's coming to. I mean, that being said, it was made by, what's his name? His last name's Webb. Mark Webb, I think, is who did it. I think that's who did it. And he does the Kingsman stuff. And did you see the tag at the end? Did you stay online for the tag?
I don't think we did.
Okay. You should watch it because it makes no sense. I mean, unless it's some really deep Kingsman lore or something, no one in the theater seemed to know what that was happening there. And it's supposed to, I guess, link this thing into the Kingsman world. I remember sitting in the theater, and when the lights went up after it was over, I looked around and everybody looked like dumbfounded. And one guy was like, told his girlfriend, was like, what was that? And she said, I have no idea. I'm like, yeah. And everybody just kind of looked like, well, I don't know what that was. So it just followed along with a nonsense movie having a nonsense tag that has no coherent idea. It just feels like You know when there's someone who has a really, I do this a lot, I have a really great idea and I think everyone will love it. And then I just tell everybody about it and they're like, I don't know what you're talking about. Because it's better in your mind than it actually is. Mm. This is
sure.
This is how I think, one, the Kingsman stuff tends to feel like. And then two, this movie as well. So it's better in your mind than it actually was.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, they did set it up for a sequel. So we'll rush out and watch Argyle 2 when it comes out. I wonder, do you know, I don't know if you've got it in front of you. Do you know who made this? What company made this? If I had a guess, I'd say it was a Warner Brothers thing or Legendary.
Maybe. I don't know. No.
Yeah, it feels like one of those two kind of companies. Mm-hmm. Anyway, moving off of that crazy movie. What else we got this week? We can watch. Let's talk about The Tourist as our movie this week.
Okay. All right. This week we sort of watched The Tourist.
We got back-to-back not great films.
This is a movie from 2010.
Yeah.
Johnny Depp and Angelina Jolie.
So in my defense, I hadn't seen or heard anything about this and picked it because of those two people being in it.
Sure.
And that's, I'm trying to come to my defense on this and say, that seemed just that enough right there feels like it should be worth watching. But I was super bored very mm-hmm. early. And
yep.
had no interest in the characters, in what was going on. They weren't interesting. And like Johnny Depp was, I don't know what he was trying to be there. Like, I guess he was trying, you know what? Johnny Depp is a character. Like he's just a character.
Yes.
Right.
That's a good, I sort of saw where you were going with that sentence. And yeah. I was like, weird, quirky, what? Character is the perfect word. Like
yeah.
Jack Sparrow.
Yeah.
And obviously he's not, he doesn't play every role dialed up to the level of Jack Sparrow.
Yeah. But he is generally. And
That's what he excels at. And in this movie, he's playing a boring regular dude.
Yeah.
And it's boring.
And it's boring. He did right. And the worst part about it, I think early on with him got me this, I'm expecting him to get better and to grow and to be interesting,
mm-hmm.
but that's not what the character is. And
right.
And then Angelina Jolie, I mean, she's beautiful and she's mm-hmm. just on screen to be beautiful most of the time, I guess.
Kind of. Yeah.
Yeah. I should have known what kind of movie this was in the first 5 minutes when they're in a surveillance of her and one guy says, she's got a great butt. And then the camera, the spy people zoom in on her
spy
butt.
Spy camera zoom in. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. And then it immediately cuts away. Like the police chief gets on or something and says, stick to the mission. And then it cuts to like the actual movie camera and it zoomed in on her butt. And I'm like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's what kind of film this is.
Yeah, yeah. And you said you didn't finish it?
I fell asleep. We're talking about Fox falling asleep.
Yeah, yeah.
I tried staying exactly. awake. I was just sitting there and I kept nodding. And what I was doing is trying to fight being on my phone. Because that's something I think is not great, especially when we're going to talk about a movie to watch or to talk about. Sorry, watch a movie to talk about. Is that if right, I get right. on my phone, I don't know if I can always get a good, or if I'm on the computer zooming out somewhere else. I can't always get a good read. And I have found myself, this is documented on this show multiple times where I'll have mm-hmm. a bad opinion of something early. And then, if I just stick with it, it ends up being really good.
Sure.
So I've tried to monitor myself to not get on my phone and to not stuff and
yeah,
watch it.
Yeah.
But I just fell asleep. I just was like, ugh.
Yeah, I watched this, I watched this on my flight back from Maryland, and I watched the beginning on my computer and the ending, and most of the middle I watched on my phone because we sat for a long time waiting for them to move a plane that was blocking us from getting out of the terminal, and then they had some problem with the tow, whatever, that pushes the plane away from the... from the so we sat there for a long time in the, like, we're about to take off, you got to put all your stuff away mode.
Yeah.
Right? And then once we took off and got to cruising altitude, then I pulled my laptop out again for the last half hour. But yeah, it was just it. So I had the same, I mean, not the same, but I had low expectations going into this because I saw on the app that it had very low Rotten Tomatoes scores. I think like 20-some% of critics and 40-some% of audiences. And I'm like, oh, this isn't a good sign. Like, it's not the worst I've ever seen, but and sometimes, like, if those two numbers are really disparate, you're like, okay, this one's more for critics or this one's more for, you know, the common folk. Right, like one's more of a Ridley Scott movie and the other is more of a James Cameron movie. Go for the Aliens reference there. Mm. But I was like, okay, so this movie is going to be bad. And then it starts and I'm like, it's not bad. It's just boring. It's not awful. It's not, I hate to compare everything to The Room because that's a different kind of bar.
Yeah,
but it's not bad in the way that, you know, I would, like, I would maybe describe Argyle, especially in the second half. Like, it's not absurd or ridiculous. It's just, like, they build up a romance between the two leads that doesn't feel like, it's like I've heard you say about some movies that I'm like, you're wrong. You're not seeing that. You missed out on this clue and this, you know, whatever subtext, whatever. And this is just like they fall in love because they're both hot, beautiful, or, you know, something like they have
there's
very little
chemistry together.
There's no chemistry. The dialogue is all pretty flat, just kind of like bad flirting kind of stuff.
Well, also she's supposed to be, at least for the first half, she's supposed to be like fake flirting with them. Like, right. Like it's not
right.
Just to get him
right.
To go
You're
along.
Like, is she who's using who and this kind of thing. And I'll go ahead and spoil the ending. I'll hit the bell here real quick. Just in case for this 15-year-old movie almost. At the very end, the mobster who's going after, so the premise of this movie is that there's someone who we sort of never see.
Alexander
Pierce.
Pierce.
Who
is the name of the guy on Civil War, on Marvel. Alexander Pierce is Robert Redford.
Oh, okay.
So that kept, every time I kept thinking, I was like, is Robert Redford coming on here? Is Robert Redford coming on?
Right. And it's 15 years ago. He definitely could have.
right.
And the idea is that this guy owes millions of dollars in back taxes to the British government and also stole a ton of money from some Russian gangsters, mobsters, whatever. And nobody knows who he is because he either does this multiple times or at least did it before the movie started, like got a bunch of plastic surgery to look like a different person.
Yeah, right.
So nobody knows what he looks like. And Paul Bettany is playing the, like, I don't know, British intelligence person. Maybe it's Interpol. Well, it's whatever their tax service is called, but he's the sort of like government agent trying to find him, and he's very suspicious. Like, he thinks anybody could be this guy. And Angelina Jolie is supposed to, she gets a letter from Alexander that says, pick somebody with my same height and build and convince them that he's me.
Yeah.
And they do that voiceover, I think, in her voice, so we don't know.
Yep.
Like, we can't pick Alexander out by his voice, his accent. And so she sees Johnny Depp on a train, and he seems like a regular average dude, just a tourist, right? That's hence the title. And, like, invites him to come with her to Venice and into his hotel room, where they're pretending to be a couple, right? Pretending to be married, and all this, all while both the mobsters and the government agents are closing in. Right. And there's a little bit of like Paul Bettany is kind of going rogue, where his higher ups, who's Timothy Dalton, are trying to get him to off the case, like give it up, it's not him, you know, we're not going to find him, we've got other missions, whatever,
right?
But he's, you know, got a white whale. And so all of that, and then there's some a lot of chase sequences, almost none of which are great. And right. I won't say they're terrible, but they're like, okay, sure. And then at the end, the mobsters have captured her, and they're trying to get her to open Alexander's safe. And Paul Bettany and the agents are watching him. They have captured Johnny Depp, thinking he's a normal dude, and are just holding him, like, keep him out of this situation because he's a wild card. He escapes from them and goes into the house where she's with the mobsters and tells them that he's Alexander and he'll open the safe. Then right before he does, Timothy Dalton comes into the van or whatever the agents are in and tells them to tell, because they've got snipers, like tells them to take the shot, to take out the mobsters. And so they do, they shoot all the mobsters, the agents come in and are like, okay, it's good, whatever. And then for reasons I've already forgotten, I watched this movie earlier today, the agents all leave the room to check on something. And then, because there's this, right, like the tension in the relationship between the leads is... like maybe Angelina Jolie's character falls in love very easily.
Yeah.
And so they have this, like, she mouths to him at some point before she thinks the mobsters are going to kill him if he doesn't open the safe, or even if he does. She mouths to him, you know, I love you. And so it's, you know, does she love him and does she still love Alexander? And she loves both. And like, what are they going to do about that? And then they cut away to the agents. And when the agents come back, the leads are both gone. The safe is open, but he left a check for the back taxes. It's like Jeez. £7 million or whatever.
Right.
And so the quote-unquote twist that happens in the last 5 minutes of the movie, if that, is that Johnny Depp was Alexander Pierce the whole time.
Was. Okay.
And then the movie's over. Like, they're in the wind.
Well, that's weird.
And yeah, it's like not okay. It's like maybe the most obvious ending, but with, and so there's no like, it's not satisfying at all.
So why did they explain? Because I didn't see that ending. Did they explain when he wrote the letter that said, pick somebody that's like my height, shape and build. She sits down and starts talking to him on the train.
Mm-hmm.
Why does she do that?
Well, she picks him because he's...
It's him.
But he looks different, right? She doesn't know.
Oh, she doesn't know because he's been changed that much.
Right, right.
But then, wait. But wasn't his height, shape, and build changed?
Yes. That's so it's like kind of close, but she picked him at random.
Okay. Weird.
Yes.
I don't know. Doesn't seem all that. Also, for a film that just ends with like no real explanation, that feels like something I would have been really bothered by.
So. Yeah, there's a little bit of conversation between him and the mobster boss to try and put, because he doesn't believe it at first when he says, and we don't either, right? Because he's supposed to be like he's faking it. He's just the everyman, yeah. Johnny Depp. Going in to save her and saying that he's Alexander. And so he's like, you know, oh, he had this. It is his teeth were stained from smoking, and he's like, "Oh, I have e-cigarettes and
Oh, he did say
braces
that,
or
right?
whatever," and they changed his forehead, and there's all this like reference to all the surgical procedures he did to look like Johnny Depp.
Oh, so if you go back and watch it all, you'd be like, "Oh, I see that now. I see that now."
Well, there's some of it, and then it's all in this dialogue, just like two scenes before this reveal that I won't call a twist because it's again super obvious.
Yeah. Well, geez.
Not obvious in that you could tell, right? But like obvious in that. Okay, sure. Because we get one scene of Rufus Sewell, who's like we're meant to think is the actual Alexander Pierce,
the Englishman.
But at the end, the agents find him, like they have him in custody because they think it's him, and Johnny Depp has been sending him money and instructions. Like, here's a bunch of money, go to this place and do it as like a decoy for the agents. And that's the explanation of that character.
Well, I did a little reading on this one, and so I have a question. I want your opinion on this, what I'm going to hear. The question basically early is, where did this fall down? What's the problem here? Is it the directing? Is it the acting? I mean, this is a cast of Angelina Jolie, Johnny Depp, Paul Bettany, Timothy Dalton. You have four great actors at least, mm-hmm. and there's other ones. So you have the ingredients right. You're not putting like, you know, table pepper on there. You're putting nice ground, you know, peppercorns. to make your ingredients. And then the directing didn't seem, I didn't see anything that was like egregious. Maybe not great.
I mean, if I think I know the question you're working toward here,
so
it's got to be the script.
Is it the script? Now, the script was based on a book, adapted from a book. And I don't know how good the book was. So could we say it's maybe the person who wrote the screenplay? Because it's not necessarily writers, I guess, if they're adapting it, right?
I mean, they're still writers. It's just a different kind of writing. You know, writing and adaptation. So that could be, it could be, you know, just either the book didn't translate well to film, or they did a poor job of adapting it. Because we've definitely seen that, right? Where, you know, a story in a book either doesn't work or is just adapted poorly. So it could be either one of those, honestly.
Yeah, I have no idea. I do think it is probably just the writing. I mean, and again, I don't want to say it's... We just talked about how writing was really, really bad for another movie, Argyle. And some other things that you read, and you're like, oh my God, it's just so... They're just... Lines are so terrible and boring. This one was just... Right. It just, there wasn't any, the writing wasn't bad. It just wasn't good. Right.
Yeah.
Non-interesting.
There was no, like, it was one of those, like I've heard you say about other things. Like, I believed the characters were in love because the script told me so.
Right. Yeah.
There was no, like nothing leading up to that in their interactions. Like, again, no, just no chemistry or, any of that. And I know it can't be the acting alone, because these are all, you know, very skilled, talented, you know, performers, actors.
You could put
a little bit of that on the directing, right? Like,
sure. And right.
There are some actors who have it, you know, it's all inside them, but a large part of that is the directing, right? Because the director knows the whole story and is giving the actors context and motivation and all those things, because most movies are filmed out of sequence.
And the directors will often say things like, they'll do 20 takes of the same scene to make sure that the thing they want, or they'll say, I want more of this, or we're not getting that chemistry, or really lean into him, you know, type thing.
Sure.
Obviously we don't know, we weren't on set there, but I did start this by saying that it's got great actors, but I've also seen great actors give not great performances on a stacked cast as well. And they just didn't do well. And then I've also seen interviews with actors who are really big at great and well-known actors, and they'll give credit to the director that pulled a performance from them. You know, like, some people can go and say, oh, I just got out there and nailed it, and I did it 16 different ways, and I loved all the different ways. But most people will say, you know, the director had me run, and then he spoke up to me and said, you know, you're not giving it your all here, and try really leaning, go over the top. You know, directors will coax it out of them. So when I think of the script not being like the dialogue wasn't super cheesy or really bad or anything, I wonder, I'm not a writer, script writer either. I wonder sometimes as a writer, maybe you see something in your head and can see how it might be performed or whatever. And I know that writers often don't get to talk to the actors. It's just a Hollywood thing, which is silly. But maybe they saw it one way, and then they gave it to the actors. The actors didn't really know how to deliver the lines that were written to get with the emotion, and then the director never pulled it out of them. Maybe it's kind of like a team effort on failing.
It's also a thing sometimes where dialogue in books does not work when you see real people delivering it.
Yes.
Like, you can read it and go, oh, that's a great line. I remember that in the first season of Game of Thrones, right? Which is maybe one of the best. I don't know. I think it built for a while. But there's at least one line I remember Peter Dinklage delivering as Tyrion. And I was like, oh, that's an awkward line. And at some point, like probably between seasons, I started listening to the audiobooks for Game of Thrones and Song of Ice and Fire again. And I was like, and I heard that line. I'm like, oh, this is verbatim out of the book. But seeing a real person deliver it on screen, it sounds a little awkward. And you know, I don't know if that's the line or the acting or the directing or like what causes that, but
This one was full of it, the whole thing.
That's part of the skill of adapting a novel into a screenplay. Maybe the chemistry between the characters worked in the book and, you know, they couldn't translate it to screen. It could also be one of those where there's a lot of inner world, right? Like you, in the book, you can describe what's going on in characters' heads and you can't do that in film. You could do a lot of other things in film, like body language and facial expressions and all those things, but you can't like narrate somebody's internal thoughts without it feeling strange or awkward in a movie.
Yeah.
So who knows?
Who knows? Well, yeah, it did overall, it did feel like just kind of a failing on everyone's part there, but not in a like really terrible way, just a really boring way.
Just incredibly mediocre.
Mediocre. Yeah. Which is unfortunate, and I had never heard of this director before. He's got quite a long name too, by the way, but, that being said, I did add to our list a movie that I feel, and I saw it years ago, like 10, when it came out, 10, 15 years ago. It's called Salt. I've added it to our list. And it's an Angelina Jolie spy movie.
I've heard of that.
I remember, and I saw it once, 15 years ago. I remember it thinking, this is incredibly good. And I really liked it and expected it to have like a whole series. Like, oh, are they going to make this into a whole James Bond type thing? And then nothing came of it. I don't know any behind story about that. Or maybe it's really bad and I just was on a weird day or something. But I've added it to our list and maybe hopefully we can go back and see an actual Angelina Jolie and we can talk about, hey, this script's better, or, you know, it failed because of X, Y, or Z, or maybe, you know, just a weird thing. So I added Salt to our list. Not that we're going to watch it next week, but we'll watch it there. Okay, so we both give it a thumbs up. Who would you recommend it to? Not anyone. I don't.
We both gave it a thumbs down.
Yeah, sorry. Did I say thumbs up? Yeah.
Yes.
Thumbs down. Double thumbs down. And yeah, I don't think anybody should waste their time watching it. I mean,
no,
two great actors that aren't doing great acting. So don't go watch all their other things. Yeah, and I will say, we'll watch it in a couple weeks, but watch Salt instead if you want an Angelina Jolie spy thing. So it's your pick next week. How are you feeling?
Well, after your thing about Salt, I checked our archive, and I don't think we have ever watched Spy Game.
Spy Kids? I don't watch Spy Kids.
No, nope, not Spy Kids. Spy Game with Robert Redford, you mentioned earlier, and I want to say Brad Pitt.
No, but those two things, and with the word spy in it, I'm in. Let's do it.
Have you ever seen? Do you recognize the name?
I don't.
Okay, we're gonna watch that. I remember it being good. We'll see if it holds up.
It feels like something I might have sadly missed out on. Yeah. Spy Game. Huh? Actually, you know what? I want to say I saw a TikTok clip of it. Oh, TikTok.
Yeah.
As one does.
As one does.
Okay, what do we got? So we saw some trailers this week for some movies. We can kind of run through, and we can ask each other opinions on it. So there was the three of them came out. We'll talk about Fallout, Borderlands, and Inside Out 2. I'm a Disney freak. Everybody knows that. Did you like Inside Out, the first one?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I was gonna say, if you weren't, you're a monster, and I need to put an ad out for a new
part. I think we talked about it. I don't think I've rewatched it. But watching it at the time, I was like, this is just, I heard that, people, I don't know if it's teachers in class, but like people were showing it to kids to like, as a like educational,
like a therapy thing,
kind of to like show them how emotions, you know, a way to understand how emotions function in our minds and how we deal with things. And I'm like, yeah, this is you know, something different. You know, a lot of Pixar films are fantastic, but that one just to like bring those things to life and see how, you know, the sort of reveal toward the end when you get bittersweet, like, oh, this is happy and sad at the same time. That's a real thing that people feel, and, you know, that's why we have so many words for different emotions, because it's complicated.
It's complicated. Well, there you go. That's Inside Out 2, right? Like, the first one dealt with, what, five, maybe, main characters? There was disgust,
five,
sadness, fear, anger, and joy, so five of them, and... Mm-hmm. Now, and just like you said, things are complicated. There's so many emotions, and we have so many different ones. And I think that's the what they're going to address in Inside Out 2, so which we'll talk about in a second. But I wanted to say that Inside Out, it felt like one of those movies, like, please don't make a sequel of this one. You know, oftentimes there's, you know, Disney in the past, way past, like 90s and before, didn't really do a lot of sequels unless they were like direct to video type sequels. Right. But then things like, well, number one, the Toy Story just knocked down those walls of that you can do that and be successful. Even the fourth one was phenomenal. And since then, there's been some other, you know, big sequels that are really good. Not all of them, so some of them fail, but sometimes they're really, really good.
It's rare that the sequel holds up.
Right.
But
Disney can do it. Pixar especially can do it. And so this next trailer came out. I mean, this is the second trailer, I should say, but we just saw a new one this week that came out. Looks to add a ton of new emotions. And I want to say one scene I liked in the trailer so far was that they're going to kind of explore bottling up your emotions, you know, hiding them away.
Yep.
I'm like, that looks really good. So what did you think of this trailer? Is it, you think it's going to be, you know, oh my God, is it not? Wait, did we mention that three of the five are also Office cast members.
Office or Parks and Rec.
Parks and Rec.
Greg,
yeah.
Greg Daniels shows.
All right, yeah. Amy Poehler's not in.
Amy Poehler is not.
In the Office.
I mean, she might have been in an episode as a guest, right. But she's not.
Mindy Kaling's in it, and
Mindy Kaling and Phyllis.
Phyllis, yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, the second good thumbs up. You like the first one. You think it's going to be okay? I mean, not scary or anything.
I'm cautiously optimistic. We'll say. I mean, sure. I have the same reservations you do. Like a lot of even Pixar has, you know, like Cars, and so many Disney sequels are just far inferior to their originals, which makes me skeptical, but. Then seeing the emotions that they're handling and like the teenager puberty kind of thing, like maybe they might pull it off.
Yeah. Another one that, I'm just going to say another one, not to interrupt our trailer reviews real quick, but, I went and watched Kung Fu Panda 4 last weekend and my kid, Sydney watched all of them. Heck, it even overlapped with my oldest at the time watching them. And then Sydney watched there was a TV series, and she watched the TV series all the time. So we really liked Kung Fu Panda, but the movies were every one of them like Italian Hand, really, really good. Like, you know, as good as the How to Train Your Dragon films. And for a silly like premise, and with characters like Jack Black leading the way, you feel like, how good can this really be? But they were really, really good and heartfelt and just good films. And the fourth one,
I was going to say Jack Black is not a character, but he kind of is.
Oh, he's a character, yeah. but the fourth one is fun as well. Poe is very lovable and has that always being positive person even when things are bad type thing going on. And it has the world humor of like animals being people type stuff. It calls back some old villains to bring them back, but in a neat, new, unique way without actually just retreading their own stuff. And does a kind of sets the world up to be, I won't say pass it to the next generation, but to progress Poe and the whole Dragon Warrior thing further. In any kind of future thing. So it was good. So that's one of the examples of sequels, animated sequels. Some of them can be pretty good. It's rare, but it can be pretty good. And I think the trailer for Inside Out 2 did look pretty good. All right, moving on to our post-apocalyptic trailers. We got Fallout and Borderlands, video game adaptations. They're both kind of first-person shooters, right?
Yeah, sort
one's of. A loot shooter, one's a RPG shooter type thing from Bethesda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something like that.
Got any opinions on those trailers? I can't remember if you've played those games. You played Fallout, right?
I've played both of those games to an extent. I think the only Fallout I finished and beat was New Vegas. But I love the aesthetics of Fallout. The trailer looks good. It looks like they've got all the things. The vaults look right. The Brotherhood of Steel or whatever they're called look right.
Yeah.
The monsters and stuff. That one's, I think, going to come down to the story. Like, what kind of story are they going to tell? Because it's a very open world kind of game.
Yeah.
With a lot of games and a lot of stories. So, like, which story are they doing? I didn't recognize it the first. I'm sure somebody out there did. You know, which game they're sort of adapting.
I can say it, but it always has
it looks nice.
It always has the same premise, at least, of a naive vault dweller coming out of the vault and then by the end becoming a seasoned pro. And the trailer kind of showed that, right? That's they're going to get that for sure.
Right.
Yeah, so I agree. It looked pretty good. It's got mutants in it, and isn't that the guy? I'm trying to think. It's the guy that's the insurance guy is in this.
Maybe
You know, I'm
the
talking about
Allstate Mayhem guy.
Allstate Mayhem guy. Yeah. I think he plays one of the mutant, main mutant cowboy, and then also like some kind of political guy in the past or something. But
oh, and Walton Goggins is in it, who was I remember him most from Justified, Timothy Olyphant, but he's done a bunch of stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and then there's Borderlands, which is more comedy because it's kind of a goofy comedy.
Yeah,
game.
Yeah. Speaking of Jack Black,
yeah. Oh, he does the robot, right?
Yeah, Claptrap. I am less optimistic about that one, except for the cast.
Right.
Like
Kate Blanchett's in it.
Yeah, Kate Blanchett. I would have said is too old to play that character, right. But she's also phenomenal. So
she is, yeah.
I'm like, sure, yeah. And
she looked fine on the trailer.
That's fine. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'm a little, I don't want to say concerned, but not crazy about the trailer having two bodily fluid jokes.
Yeah.
In the same. But
you're right. Who, like the question right, is, who are they making this for? Is this going to be for 13-year-old boys?
Yeah, yeah. And are there, like, is that demographic Borderlands fans? Like, have they made games recently enough that anyone in that age bracket has played them?
Yeah, good,
not
good
anyone,
question.
But like enough have played them. I feel like the majority of people who played Borderlands are closer to our age.
And I would say that earlier Borderlands, like Borderlands 2 and 3, people, I think that the demographic there were like, I would say actually more like your youngest brother's age. That could be.
But though that demographic is like late 20s, early
yeah,
30s
late 20s now. Right. Yeah.
But
when the game came out, it was teens, like mid-teens, maybe 16, 17.
Yes, yes. It's very juvenile humor, which is fine. Like, that's not, depending on how it's handled, that's not limited to that age bracket.
Yeah, for sure. And that's not, also, it's not bad days. If it is made for that. If it's made for that, that's fine, right?
Right, right. Yeah. You know, I'll quote a podcaster that I heard years ago when they were doing something, some new thing, I think after Tales from the Borderlands, it might have been like the earliest announcements of them maybe making a movie, who said Borderlands is a franchise that is not as funny as it thinks it is.
That's fair.
And okay, I can't really deny that. Like, there are parts of it that are funny, but I've never finished, and I played 1 and 2, never finished them. I think I started Tales, the Telltale style one, and didn't get super far with it, but I also have a weird mental block with those kind of games.
Yeah.
And yeah, a lot of the comedy is like funny the first time you hear it, but it's another kind of open world game where you'll hear a lot of those jokes over and over, and then they made sequels and
yeah,
kind of do the same kind of jokes, and you're like, okay, this is not, like, it's just not that funny anymore.
Yeah, I think I...
That
I
doesn't kind of necessarily mean that they can't
yeah
make a funny movie, or I think it's a movie.
Yeah, because it's just going to be like an hour and a half, right? Or 2 hours.
Yeah, and have the jokes once, and, you know, some of them from the earlier games are old enough now that they get a little nostalgia factor or something like that. It's not, mm-hmm. I'm not saying that can't work. It just adds to my general low expectations.
Yeah, I think that's where it should sit. It should sit at a low expectations for that film. I think Fallout should also start at low expectations, just because
I agree.
Both of those just feel, because they are open world. It's hard in both of those games for me often to stick with them. Only one Fallout game that I
yep.
stick with. Borderlands, same. I actually went all the way through 2 and 3, surprisingly. But it was because it was for the same reason I finished Diablo for the most part. It's just kind of the entertaining loot shooter grind type thing. You're just going mm-hmm. through and shooting and blow. I can blow up something with a bigger weapon and a bigger. Same reason I play all the Ratchet and Clanks. You get a new weapon and then upgrade it more and it explodes even bigger and how many more things. But it's not because it's compelling story or the world is like crazy interesting and amazing. It's fine. But honestly, I often will get Fallout and Borderlands mixed up. I know that's heresy to some people.
Sure, I get it. I think Fallout has more like memorable story moments. I don't know how many of those I've played, but I feel like when you get to a big like a wow moment, and I don't mean World of Warcraft. I mean an impressive memorable moment in a Fallout game, it's probably story.
Right.
That does that where I feel like the wow moments, the memorable moments in Borderlands are more video gamey. It's like
absolutely
like killing an impressive World of Warcraft boss.
Yes, no, I absolutely agree. Absolutely,
like
agree.
Oh, they made the city fly. Like that's not really the story.
Yeah,
it's just something cool that happened, which is fine. Right. It just doesn't maybe lend itself to a film.
Yeah, and because they are open world games, the narrative when you're playing them can be very slow. It's one of the problems I have with still trying to finish Horizon Forbidden West is that it's so open often that the main quest doesn't feel like the main quest and you're doing all these other things. And when you're doing so many side quests that no one feels pressured for what's happening, you know what I mean? Like, oh, the world's going to come to an end if we don't get this nuclear core to the thing. But then you're going all these side quests. They're like, my donkey is stuck in the woods. Can you go pick up some berries for me? You
know, I mean, that's literally why I dropped off of Fallout 4. Like the story is like, you have a kid, you have a son or daughter who's kidnapped or something. And by the time I had like built up my fourth NPC town with a bunch of NPC vendors and lined up their little shops and done all this stuff with the weird like crafting mechanic in that game, I was like, I think I'm done with this.
Forbidden West game, Horizon Forbidden West game, it's often, oh, Silas, we're chasing this Silas guy and he's gonna go unleash this evil upon the world, and there's these evil sci-fi people that came down and they're getting ready to unleash this devastating program and we have to stop them. But let's stop and talk about tribal politics in the jungle. And then, you know, we've lost my sister up in the mountains. And can we go? I'm like, oh my God, literally the world is ending. And I'm doing all these million side quests. Yes, people can say you don't have to do any side quests, but that's the problem with open world games is you don't stay focused. And Fallout and Borderlands, to bring it back, can often have those. I think Borderlands less because it kind of almost sometimes has a rail feeling to it somewhat. But Fallout for sure is so open world that I lose track of what the main story is. And they often will have to they'll try to put hints here like, oh, here's a little television program on the TV in this gas station. Well, if you don't watch that little thing that's just sitting there, you walk off, you don't see it. Or if you don't read the books or the things on the wall, posters, or you know, it's kind of subtle, which means what's it going to be like for a movie? I don't know. You know, you said, what's the story going to be? I have no idea what it could be because I don't know. I don't remember much of the stories for any of the Fallout games. Borderlands, I think characters have to be big. You got to have Handsome Jack, and he's got to be really good because he was part of the things that made it, you know, attractive or funny. Claptrap's got to be good. Tiny Tina has to be fantastic. Otherwise, you're just, you know, it's going to be a weak Fallout thing for copy. Anyway, those look okay. Good. Yeah, things, but we don't know until we see them. I know I talked about a couple weeks ago about going to watch Avatar, The Last Airbender. I just wanted to comment that I haven't watched it intentionally. My daughter's coming here for spring break in the end of March in about 2 weeks. And then we've decided that we're going to watch it all together. We did watch the first episode. I think I might've mentioned on the show so far, not impressed. but they have been greenlit for season 2 and 3, which is the whole series. So that's, at least I know if I watch it, I'll be able to see the end, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
So that,
yeah, I've heard very mixed feedback, both from people who watched all of that. I've not heard feedback from anybody who has not watched the original, except that our buddy Fox, who's really enjoying it, thinks that it's probably less accessible to people who didn't watch the original cartoon.
Oh, that's good. I want to talk to him about this because I didn't know he's watching it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, okay, moving off that thing for our last topic of the day. We kind of hinted at this earlier, but you want to give us some time with your thoughts on the Oscar stuff? You know, I'm not a, well, both of us generally aren't really awards people.
Sure.
But, you know, it's fun, and we have some good friends that enjoy the Oscar stuff, and you were, last couple of years, been able to participate in some of their get-togethers, and this year is no exception. I'm sure the party was fun, but how was the Oscars in general?
I did not see last year's, except for clips of Kehi Kwan and others accepting the awards for Everything Everywhere All at Once. I guess that was the extent of my participation, was walking out of the theater from that movie in like March or whenever, like, because it came out very early in the cycle there, and going and messaging our friend Fox and saying, I'd never do this, but this is going to get nominated for, at the very least, nominated for an Oscar. And we've gushed about that movie at length.
I watched that like in 2 weeks ago, and let me tell you, it holds up.
Yeah, it's excellent. This year, I had seen about half of the nominees, the Best Picture nominees anyway. And so I did the ballot. I was a little optimistic about my ballot. We call it the ballot, right? Like, yeah, you pick. It's like doing a bracket in March Madness. Like, there's it's a list of all the nominees in all the categories. You pick who you think's going to win, and whoever has the most correct picks wins.
Did you win?
No, I did not. I got 9 out of 23. I think Geek Scholar Chris got about half. He got like 18 or 19.
Wow.
No, that's not half. Whatever. He, not half. He got about 2/3. Okay. And Jill won. I think she missed 2 or maybe 3.
Man.
Out of 20.
Jill's just our our winner friend. She's just got it going on.
Yeah,
she knows,
I think,
her stuff.
I guess historically Chris usually wins, but he was not good. There. He sent in, he was at a wedding, and so he sent in his ballot remotely. But yeah,
he didn't win anyway. Jill got it.
right. The host was Jimmy Kimmel, who I'm not a huge fan of. I don't really have strong feelings about him, but I guess he hosted last year and was not very good. It was mostly mean in a not funny way.
Huh.
Where this year he was still a little mean, but most of the jokes landed. There were a couple I got that I don't think other people got. That was gratifying for me, but
you were in the know.
I might also be thinking of SNL because we watched like 2/3 of the Josh Brolin hosted Saturday Night Live from last weekend. I don't normally watch SNL either, but I might be mixing those two up in my head because we watch it after everyone went home. Something they did that I guess is new from the way Fox and others react to it is that for the 4 acting categories, right? Best actor, best actress, supporting actor, and supporting actress.
Okay.
They brought back last year's winner and 4 other prior winners in that category to address each of the nominees.
Interesting.
And I'm describing it kind of in an awkward way, but what would happen is Michelle Yao and I don't remember who all four of them were, but there were a couple of like legends, like I think Sophia Loren was up there, and Mary Steenburgen.
And they like present awards to him, or?
Well, so before each category, right, somebody comes up and kind of, and then, maybe they'll show clips or whatever. But for the acting categories, each of those five actors on stage would address each of the nominees and just kind of praise them and their career and their performance in this film. And in at least one case in each of these four categories, one of the nominees, you could see them at least tearing up. Paul Giamatti was like, there were tears running down his face.
Oh, that's my
And it
dude. I
was,
like that guy.
yeah, and it was just very touching.
Gonna have to go watch clips on that.
Yeah, like you know that it's, some of them are reading off the teleprompter, some of them are a little more sincere, but the idea for some of these people to have, like someone that they really looked up to, right? Someone they really admire in their career, like a legend in the craft of acting, up on stage, telling them how great they were in this performance as maybe a younger performer or somebody who hasn't won
Yeah.
one yet. It was really kind of heartwarming.
Nice.
And
So
yeah,
you see
and
people they
what else can
admire type thing giving talk, saying good things about them, right?
Yeah, exactly. Which I thought was super sweet. And what other highlights? John Mulaney got up to introduce one of the categories, and did a whole sort of bit about Field of Dreams, sort of like Patton Oswalt doing the filibuster in Parks and Rec, right, where he's just like he's describing this movie, and he's like, man, Field of Dreams, that's a great movie. They should give it to that. That one should win. It's like, they'll probably pick one from this year. And that was funny. And another highlight was Ryan Gosling got up and did the Ken song
I did
from
see
Barbie,
that.
including Simu Liu and all the other actors, like the main actors who played Ken, in the Barbie movie, and it was fantastic. I think Axl Rose was even up there,
No,
like
it
playing
was
him. No, it
Slash.
wasn't. It's
Slash.
Slash. That's Fox said Axl Rose, and I'm like, I don't, that's not right. It's the guy. It's the other guy
From Guns N' Roses, right?
from Guns N' Roses. Yeah.
Yeah, Slash. I saw Slash just out of nowhere appear. I'm like, what?
Yeah. Like, what's this guy doing here? And it was fantastic, right? And kind of a little bit of a, not payback, but like a balance for how few nominations and I mean, Barbie got a decent amount of nominations, but
Yeah. See, I not that I'm paid by TikTok, but I watched it enough, and that they showed a lot of those highlights that you're
a
mentioning,
lot of
and
those highlights, yeah.
yeah.
I got on for a little bit after, before I went to bed that night, and I was like, wow, these are already up on TikTok.
Which is pretty great that, like, if you don't want to watch the whole thing of something, you can just go see highlights on TikTok of whatever, like the Super Bowl or commercials or anything that for the Super Bowl. Or
Yeah,
I
I mean,
saw I saw the
I've done that
NCAA
on
tournament
YouTube with
women's
the
had a
Super Bowl
fight. I watched it on there.
for the other I'm trying to think what other there were a lot of good funny moments. At some point somebody on there were a lot of people doing crowd, quote unquote crowd work with the celebrities in the audience. Like there were several interactions with Spielberg, like
Oh, really?
where Spielberg would look to camera. One of them was really funny, and I can't remember now what it was. But somebody at one point was talking to Robert Downey Jr. and referenced Tropic Thunder.
Okay.
Like here's a guy, there are some actors who don't break character until they're after they're done doing the DVD commentary. I'm like, did they just reference Tropic Thunder? Like, the Downey Jr.'s performance that probably a lot of people would like to, you know, let fade into history, where he's right. he's doing blackface, which was great. And I think he was talking to Paul Giamatti, because in The Holdovers, he his character has a lazy eye, and so he's wearing a contact to make. I think that was what the reference was there. But and then Emma Stone won Best Actress for Poor Things, and you could tell from her reaction, like when they call her name and when she gets on stage, that she was completely not expecting to win.
I did see
because
that.
All the nominees in that category were fantastic. And that was very, you know, kind of, I don't want to say sweet again, but like real or genuine.
Right.
At least that's how it felt watching it.
Yeah. Those are some of my favorites. I mean, I get when people have to get up for awards and they want to thank people that helped them along the way for getting that way. That obviously that's what that's for. But I kind of also like the, Pedro Pascal's, you know, like, I've been drinking too much and, you know, this is just a really good thing. I didn't expect it. I'm really happy that you guys think good of me. Have a nice night. Like, those are my favorite ones where they're, you know, just to be getting an award.
Yeah. And like Kehi Kwan last year was just like,
yes,
I could probably watch it again and still get teary eyed.
Yeah. That's a perfect example of, you know, like it's validation is what these are supposed to be, I think, you know.
Right. It's easy to look at a lot of it and be a little cynical.
Right.
Because of what it is, because of Hollywood and all of that stuff. But then every once in a while you get these stories of, like, you know, here's somebody who maybe gave up on it, or you know, whatever, like it is a, it's just genuine. It's like, seems like a real person.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah. And Kehi Kwan was one of them. By the way, he was a voice in Kung Fu Panda. So that was pretty great. Well, I think that's what we got this week. We got a lot of stuff going on in here. So next week we're going to watch, what was our show?
Spy Game.
That's right. The new one. I've got to write that down. Make sure that's down there. Spy Game. Okay, cool. For our show. And yeah, see, what else do we have? Is there anything on movies coming out this week? I can't remember.
There's almost nothing. When Fox, Jill and I went out to eat, Fox said he saw people going into the AMC, because we were in that same mall where we saw, through Morbius. Yeah. And we were trying to think, and we're looking at the posters, like, nope, never heard of that. Never heard of that. No, that doesn't look that great. And my best guess was people seeing Dune right. Part 2, which I still have not seen.
This weekend is Arthur, I think it's Arthur the King. I think that's the Marky Mark real thing of the dog followed. Was it like a true story type thing where a runner found a dog along the way and it helped him? And
okay. I was very confused by that sentence because you said Arthur and I was thinking of King Arthur.
It's Arthur the King is the name of the movie.
Okay, that's
they named
that's
the
what
dog Arthur
me.
Because he's like a king.
Got it. Yes.
But that it's a feel good movie, and I can see, since I'm AMC A list, I get, you know, the free movies. I might go sit on that one. But I also kind of, you know, wouldn't mind watching Dune 2 again. It's amazingly, it's only showing on limited screens now. It's only been out not even a month, and they're already tapering it down, which is crazy that they do that these days. You know, films don't sit in theaters much long anymore. They go straight to streaming and
sure,
make some money off of that stuff. And I don't know if this one is, but it's not showing a lot of things around here. Anyway, yeah. And I'm moving this weekend, so it'll be a big weekend for me to set up the house.
Week,
Hopefully I'll be able to sit in my new game room and watch some movies, and you know, fall asleep watching movies and get up and watch them again the next day, play some good games. It'd be nice. Fun. Nice.
All right. Well, you've been listening to The Front Porch. This is episode 340. Thanks always to our friends at LRM Online. I am assuming Fox will have an article up about the Oscars pretty soon, maybe by the time you hear this. If you want to email us and tell us everything we're wrong about The Tourist and how it's Johnny Depp and or Angelina Jolie's best work, you could do that via email. Our address is frontporchpod@gmail.com, or you can go to our website, frontporchpodcast.com, where you'll find contact forms to reach out to us and links to the things that we talked about this week. If you enjoy the show, please consider subscribing on the podcatcher of your choice. And while you're there, if you would leave us a favorable review, please appreciate that. It helps out a lot. As always, thanks so much for joining us. Until next time, I'm Dennis.
And I'm Michael.
For The Front Porch.
Night, everybody.
See you next time.